For argument, Perkins versus Lawson, Mr. Bloom.
May it please the court, my name is Ralph Bloom and I'm representing the appellants, Mr. Perkins and Mrs. Perkins. This case is an appeal from a granting of the defendant's motion for summary judgment on a 1983 claim and an Indiana negligence claim filed by the plaintiffs. The issues raised is whether or not there was a material issue of fact as to whether William Perkins presented an issue of fact that the sheriff was deliberately indifferent to his serious medical needs, which precluded the granting of the motion for summary judgment.
Mr. Bloom, I have two questions for you. One of them is, in what capacity are you suing the sheriff, his official or his individual? In his official capacity,
right.
Okay. My other question is whether your case focuses on only the time period January 23 to 26, or whether you're focusing on the entire time period he was in jail.
I think we have to look at it as a continuous set of circumstances and facts that lead up to what happened between January 23rd and the 26th. Because of the knowledge of the condition of the defendant by the jail personnel and the sheriff himself, which they learned that prior to the time, prior to January 23rd, when he was isolated in a separate cell.
Right. I mean, there are issues with both of these. In an official capacity suit, you really have to show that the sheriff had a policy of disregarding the health of people entrusted to his care. And your opponents argue that there, at the most, this is one incident, even if it's that. And with respect to the other aspect, you know, the whole course of events, In the broad scheme of these kinds of cases, it seems that they were giving him a lot of care. It's just perhaps the doctors and hospitals were failing to see everything they should have seen, but it's hard for me to see how that's the sheriff's.
Well, Your Honor, the sheriff and the nurse, the practical nurse, whoever it was.
She's an LPN, yeah.
Right, at the jail. Realized that he was in very difficult, serious condition, and they sent him to the ER at Marion General Hospital, and they found at that time, on the 23rd, that he was in good condition. They couldn't find that he was dehydrated or what his condition was, in fact. So they sent him back to the jail. Well, the nurse was surprised when she learned this. She called the staff of the jail, and she said surprised that he was sent back. But at that point, then, they all seemed to go fishing. What happened? They put him in jail.
But you would agree that up till that point, up until January 23rd, there was nothing that the sheriff had done wrong. There was no step he should have taken that he didn't take.
I would agree with that, Your Honor.
Okay, so this really is just about the 23rd.
Right, but you have to look at the background to see what they knew and how that affected what they did or didn't do after that. But they allowed him to be isolated in a cell for 3 days, and it appeared
to... Well, they were careless, maybe, but worse than careless?
Yes, Your Honor. In view of the fact that he couldn't eat or drink during that period of time, that
the doctor had said that he could. Now,
pardon?
Maybe the doctor was wrong, but why should they have second-guessed what the doctor at Marion had said?
Well, I believe because of the facts were that he wasn't, in fact, eating or drinking. Not that the doctor in Marion said he could, but the jailers could see that his water was coming back, his food was coming back, he wasn't eating. He was dehydrated.
Isn't there some evidence that the district court excluded?
Pardon?
Your assumption about what the jail personnel knew? Didn't the district court
right.
exclude
he did
those parts?
Right. You could interpret what we said in the affidavit that the plaintiff knew what was in the minds of the people at the jail, and that is not what we meant to say. We meant to say he believed that they could see that he wasn't eating and drinking. This seemed to be what people would see in the ordinary circumstances.
Do you have any evidence that the condition of these food trays was information that made its way back to the sheriff?
Directly to the sheriff?
Right.
No. But it certainly would seem to be obvious to the people that were at the jail at the time. And the only way Mr. Perkins could get their attention, he was in a cell isolated, was to get on the floor, crawl to the door, kick the door, and try to get somebody to help him.
Why was he released on the 26th? Was a sentence
he was released on his own recognizance, Your Honor.
Was that because of his condition?
I think so. I don't know that there's any direct evidence to that, but I don't know there would be no other reason to release him. Because, and he was released to the custody of his wife, who immediately took him to the doctor, and the doctor, Iqbal, who was a neurologist, then sent him to Fort Wayne. He was in critical condition by ambulance, and he was put on life support at that point.
That's a pretty good response to a serious medical condition, isn't it?
But that's not what that's not what the sheriff did. That's what the wife did. The sheriff simply...
Well, somebody brought to the attention of whatever was holding him there. They had a judicial order. He was an inmate in the jail, and he was released. So somebody obviously said, this guy's in bad shape. Let's let him go.
Right. But at what point why didn't they take him back to the emergency room? Our complaint is, why didn't they take him back to the emergency room Friday evening, anytime Saturday, anytime Sunday, and anytime Monday morning? They waited for his wife to get there so that they could get rid of the problem, in effect. And if somebody was sick in your home or your child and you knew he didn't eat or drink for 3 days, to me that would be somewhat criminal in nature. Child neglect. But this man, they had all this background information, but there was nobody there to take care of him during this 3-day period. And I think Judge Lee totally disregarded that information. He seemed to say, well, the sheriff took him to the emergency room, the doctor saw him, and that's all the sheriff had to do. He just didn't pay any attention to what happened after that. And that's why these 3 days are critical in considering the evidence in this case. And I think it's particularly true because in this case we have a question of Indiana state law negligence. Perhaps this is not the strongest case in the world, admittedly, on deliberate indifference, but certainly it seems like a very strong case from an Indiana negligence point of view. And I would certainly suggest that we ask the court to consider those both things and perhaps remand the case back.
This case started out in state court, right?
Yes, and it was removed by the defendant.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Bloom.
Thank
you. Mr. Morrow?
May it please the court, I'm Michael Morrow on behalf of Sheriff Watson. Since our time is brief, I'd like to really focus on what I perceive the plaintiff is trying to put forward as his strongest argument, was notice to everyone, which he seems to have. I realize it's not notice to the sheriff. As a matter of fact, the sheriff was apparently on the 22nd. It was when Connie Perkins said this conversation happened, but the day before the 23rd. At that time, Dr. Oliver at the jail had just seen him on the 20th and said that Mr. Perkins was improving, and the sheriff had talked to Nurse Walters, who apparently conveyed, although the sheriff didn't recall it, looking at the plaintiff's best evidence, that's what Connie Perkins reports, the sheriff saying to her, is that he's, the doctor thinks he's okay. So that's the sheriff's last notice, and the sheriff had no notice that any medical staff or people at the hospital or anything about jailers after that. And as an official capacity claim, if you're not going on policy and practice, you have to go on some kind of a decision of the policymaker, and the sheriff had no opportunity for a decision after the 22nd.
What about the state law claims here?
I think the plaintiff has cited Trout versus Buey, I think which is really perhaps the most developed state law negligence claim similar to this. Judge Lee found that there was trained medical staff at the jail. These are his findings pertinent to the state law claim, that the staff sent Perkins to Marion General for further treatment and testing. and that they'd followed doctor's orders. That actually, those, while he didn't cite Trout, if you take a look at Trout, it's very consistent with the what the Indiana Court of Appeals said in Trout, where there was a question of staff knowing things and perhaps doctors not knowing, not doing things properly, and it was a broken nose claim, which is you know, something which arguably is open and obvious without some kind of an expert opinion. Although some people, of course, have broken noses that don't show they're broken, but let's take it as an open and obvious claim where the staff bypassed it. In Trout, which is 653 Northeast 2nd, 1002 at page 1008, the Court of Appeals of Indiana focuses on no evidence that the sheriff knew or should have known that the...
Well, now, what exactly the responsibility of the sheriff? Is it just to run the jail?
You know, it's, he has a duty of reasonable care
under Indiana negligence law. Not his legal duty. Yeah. His job. What's his job? Does he just run the jail? Is that...
He's an administrator. He has staff meetings. He has a duty to set up the policy, which he did.
You're not tracking me.
Okay.
What are his job duties? Does he just run a jail, or does he go around chasing criminals, or
he
what?
Does all these things. I mean,
where is his office in the jail?
He has an office in the jail. He has a jail commander, Mike Lowe, in this case.
So there's actually a separate jail command. That's what I realized.
Right. There's a jail commander, Mike Lowe, who I think was jail commander for probably 10 years.
He has another office location. The sheriff has another office location as well, like in the county building or something?
I don't believe so.
So only in the jail?
Actually, that jail is the county office building. With some 300 prisoners, but he has the medical policy, which is essentially administered by Nurse Walden.
Does he have other law enforcement responsibilities in the county, or is basically, even though there's a jail command, is the jail the basic thing he does?
Oh no,
the sheriff does.
No, I would say that.
He has a police force?
Sure. He has a county police force in Grant County. And there's a major city there, Marion. Major for Indiana standards, Your Honor.
Right. This is Marion County.
It's Marion, Indiana. It's halfway between Indianapolis and Fort Wayne, just west of I-65, or 69, I should say. And, no, he has these law enforcement responsibilities, but he does have the duty under state law of reasonable care. It's not a statutory. The statute kind of covers what... You know, but that statute is cited. It's not a statutory negligence claim, but there's a plethora of cases that talk about the duty of reasonable care. And just to conclude on the state law duty in Trout versus Buey, the Court of Appeals focused on what did the sheriff know about this hospital that screwed up? What did the sheriff know about this doctor? And there was no evidence that the sheriff had notice of these of systemic problems. It's similar to what you would look at, I suppose, if you were looking at deliberate indifference, not as criminal recklessness, but as civil recklessness. And here we have neither. The sheriff has no notice that Marion Hospital is having problems, no notice that Dr. Oliver is having problems, no notice that Dr. Phillips is having problems, no notice that Nurse Walder is having problems. So I think fairly, under the evidence presented, he was entitled to rely upon that. I think that I want again to try to give the plaintiff his strongest argument. His strongest argument is he's trying to put it in the category like the broken nose case. You don't need a medical doctor. A guy needs water. That's what he said. A guy needs water. Anybody should recognize that. The point is that within a day that Connie Perkins talked to the sheriff, William Perkins was sent to Marion General Hospital specifically on that complaint, and it was specifically reviewed by Dr. Phillips there, and that's in what the plaintiff calls S-121 to S-122. Dr. Phillips had a conversation. He didn't just review it. He had a conversation with Mr. Perkins about the water. Apparently electrolytes were normal. There was some kind of a test. And he told him that this was all normal, and then Mr. Perkins said, according to the record, and I'm not trying to prove the truth of the fact asserted, but to the extent that record is noticed to us, it was discussed with Mr. Perkins, and then Mr. Perkins said, well, yes, I have been drinking, but not as much as I would like. So, and he also didn't appear to Dr. Phillips appear dehydrated. So there was a medical analysis of this, which we did fulfill our duty of care under Indiana law. And there's nothing after that except nameless jailers who may have seen things which one would not necessarily conclude were related to a neurological problem, okay, without the kind of expert evidence which is lacking. I think one very key finding Judge Lee made at page 136, no evidence that the alleged brainstem stroke diagnosed after Mr. Perkins left the jail was diagnosable while he was at the jail, and or would have even been noticeable by the doctor during that period as a brainstem stroke. So there's no evidence on a really key thing. Was this even medically diagnosable at that time?
How old was he, Perkins?
I believe Mr. Perkins, late 30s. Essentially, even if you accept the notice to a common man problem, you still have the problem of notice to Sheriff Lawson on an official capacity basis, and no further decision, and certainly nothing in the realm of policy making. Or we have our policies in the evidence. They're thorough. We have a 40-hour-a-week nurse, which not all Indiana jails have. It's not required by Indiana jail rules. We have a doctor that comes twice a week. With Marion General is available, people are taken there. And in fact, the evidence is uncontradicted that the sheriff did nothing by his policies or here to limit Mr. Perkins' medical care in any way or for any reason. Thank you, Your Honor.
Okay, thank you very much, Mr. Morrow. Mr. Bloom, how much time does he have? I'm curious why you sued the sheriff. Why wouldn't the jail commander or the nurse or the guard be more appropriate defendants?
Right, I think when we originally filed the case, it appeared that no one of those particular individuals were directly, necessarily involved in the whole continuing saga of the case. It's not like a deputy beating an inmate because, this man did this act. This act went.
Well, what about the nurse who failed to observe when he returned that he had this problem?
Pardon, Your Honor?
Wasn't there a nurse who saw him after he came back from the hospital?
No. The last time she saw him was before he went into the hospital. That's another problem. She was off for the weekend. She wasn't employed. There was no medical staff there over the weekend.
Well, someone was attending him on the jail staff, weren't they?
Not over that week, other than the guards, the normal inmate guards. There was no medical staff there.
What's the negligence then? I don't quite get it.
Well, they failed to provide minimum medical care for the time from January 23rd to January 26th, in which period of time he went from good health, according to the emergency.
But they thought, as far as they knew, when he came back from the hospital, he was normal. So what?
Well, the doctor from
the emergency. Did he complain to a particular guard? And if so, why isn't that guard the defendant?
I don't know that he was assigned to a particular guard. He was in an isolated cell. People, but probably various people over the period of 3 days would be.
Well, is there a complaint that jail doesn't have enough guards or what?
Well, my complaint is that they didn't give him minimal medical care.
They didn't have any reason to know he had a problem. Once
Judge,
he came
he
back
wasn't
to the
eating,
hospital
he wasn't,
with a clean bill of health.
He wasn't eating or drinking, and the doctor.
Well, now who knew that he wasn't eating and drinking?
Himself and the inmate guards.
Well, why aren't the inmate guards the defendants then?
Because I can't say that this particular guard knew that the whole period of the 3 days, or maybe the people that were guarding him on Monday or Sunday. It's hard to determine to pick out an individual.
Well, the fact that you can't figure out who. The fact that you can't figure out who was responsible for someone's accident or injury doesn't mean you can sue someone who doesn't have anything to do with it.
Well, Your Honor, under Indiana law, certainly you can, under respondeat superior, the sheriff is responsible for the acts of his subordinates and for what happens.
I didn't even think that was your theory.
Yes, it is. It's the second theory.
Your theory is that the guards were negligent. The guards who, the unknown guards, who saw him unable to eat and drink, they were negligent, and because they were negligent, he's liable.
That's
or
right.
Rather, the county is liable.
That's correct, Your Honor, under the Indiana tort law.
That's your theory?
Right.
And that's your state law claim.
That's right.
Right.
Not your 1983 claim.
No, there's no respondeat superior liability, as I understand.
Okay, well, thank you.
Thank you,
Thank you to both counsel. And the court will